Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico?
I'm as bad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
All right. Again, the one-man show problem is that sometimes the audio doesn't turn on when we start the show. So let me start that again. Welcome, Taxation is Theft, and I have Joe Howe with me today, who is a chairman for the LP Iowa, and Taxation is Theft. I'm trying to remember everything I just said while I was on mute. And so, of course, as you know, I've got these really cool t-shirts. Let me show that off again. Legalized pineapple pizza. Make sure you go to get your t-shirts from Berman2020.com and your cool hats. I know if you're like watching this, you're like, what the hell is he doing again? Okay, go get your hats. We just sold out of these at the California convention. They are awesome. Everybody loves them. Everybody's going to be wearing them. We're going to dominate the hat wearing arena with more hats than the MAGA hats. So that's the plan. Also, if you're interested in volunteering, we have a million of these things almost literally that we're trying to get out into the hands of everybody in the entire country, which has a lot of information about the campaign platform. So without any further ado, on to our subject for the day. I've got Joe Howe with me, and he used to be a waiter at a restaurant, and we always hear a lot of talk back and forth about you should tip this much. You're an asshole if you don't tip. They should raise the minimum wage. A lot of really interesting topics surrounding these issues. So we have here an expert in the field, Joe Howe. How's it going?
Good. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So it's funny running into you again. it's only been a week or so since I was in Iowa at the convention. That's how the libertarian circle works. So let's just kind of start off and kind of give us a history. What's your background in working in a restaurant?
Yeah, so I worked in restaurants for about 15 years before I called my other wife, before I went back to college and wrapped up and took a job in financial services. So I did everything from bartend to wait tables to bus tables throughout that 15-year period. Basically started in high school like a lot of folks do and you know, worked for tips or tip share for, gosh, like I said, most of 15 years. Bartended, like I said, that was a lot of fun, but, you know, the tax man comes, right?
Right. Yeah, they always want their cut. And it sucks because this is, you know, it's when you hear about taxes, it's always going to be on the rich, right? It's always the 1% that's going to get taxed, or it's anyone who makes $100,000. That's when people like Bernie Sanders come around and sell us on taxes, that's always how it is. And somehow, no matter how little you make, the tax man always wants a cut of yours. And wait a minute. Yeah. I thought these taxes were just supposed to be for the people who made a lot of money. Who decided that we were going to pay taxes on you know, when we just earn a little? What's that?
Everyone decides their fair share, right?
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting. That's always the story. You know, what do they say? The alibi of tyrants is always the common good. Something to that effect. It's, you know, it's once the tax is there, we're only going to create a tax for the 1%. Actually, the current income tax we have now was originally just a tax on corporations. And then they were like, okay, we got our foot in the door. We have the system. We have the IRS. Let's tell everybody they have to pay. And what are you going to do?
Yeah, it's kind of that scene versus, you know, it's corporations. Who likes corporations? Not a lot of people, a lot of libertarians don't, because of the corporatism, right?
Right.
So through the corporate world and at the same time, they're passing on, the unseen is they're passing on the cost to the consumer. So the consumer pays that tax just indirectly.
Yep. It's, you know, it's funny, like every time money changes hands, you have to pay the tax on it. So, you know, if I pay you to cut my lawn with $10, they're going to take a cut. Now we have seven, and then you pay me to paint your house. They're going to take a cut, and now we're down to four. And then I'm going to pay you to, I don't know, fix my wiring. Now we're down to three. And all this money goes to the government, and, you know, it's like, it's just us. We're just helping each other out. The money's just going back and forth, and somehow they get their cut of all of that. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So what kind of sparked this conversation up was, I used to work at a restaurant too. Of course, I was a host for the longest time, and I really didn't care about the job. So I never worked my way up, which isn't difficult. I think becoming a server, it is a lot of work. That's something that's overlooked a lot of, and that actually gave me a lot of perspective when I do go to restaurants, because, you know, a lot of people think like, oh, these people are I'm better than them. All they do is serve food. It's actually a pretty complicated job. And most of these people are actually really nice to you. And when people are kind of rude in return, you don't tip well. It's pretty arrogant. It's pretty rude. But one thing that I really remember from working there was talking to a lot of the waiters, and with their tips included, they would brag about how they would make so much more money than the managers. The managers, I think, were making like 35 grand, and the a lot of the wait staff and bartenders were making 40 or 50. And in this thread, when I asked this question, we saw people that were commenting, yeah, I used to make 60, 70, 80 before taxes.
Yeah.
It's really amazing to see. Now, what's interesting about this is, you know, the wait staff makes minimum wage, usually.
It depends on the state. There's different laws. I believe it's like a tip credit. Mm-hmm. So I know in our state, when I waited tables, I would make like $2.85 an hour, which was, there's some sort of formula where it was a percentage of the state minimum wage. That can depend on the state. I think in, you know, some cities, say in California, there's a very high minimum wage, which also causes other issues. So it just depends on the state.
Right. And I think in Texas, they have like a tipped minimum wage and a non-tipped minimum wage.
Yep.
With the expectation. Yeah. And what's interesting about that is, who determines if your wage is tipped or not? I mean, there's, if you're working in a restaurant, that's kind of an assumption that anyone who works at a restaurant gets tips. But what about barbers? Some people tip their barbers. There are all kinds of other professions that sometimes make tips, sometimes don't, because you might be a barber and, you know, maybe out of 100 customers, maybe 5 of them tip you. Does that mean that you now have to get the tipped minimum wage? That's a whole interesting calculation in itself. But so what's interesting is that, you know, this kind of goes to the idea that if you work hard and apply yourself, you can do well for yourself. And if you're, what kind of money were you making when you were bartending or when you were waiting?
When I was full-time, so I was kind of part-time, full-time throughout the years, depending on, you know, classes. But when I was full-time, you know, I could easily pull, 45, 55, 60,000.
Wow.
Which is obviously significantly more than the minimum wage. It depends where I work, too. You know, when I first started off, as you gain experience, it's like any other job. You know, you usually work as, you know, a host when you're starting off, or maybe at, you know, a chain restaurant, which, has lower price points. And I eventually worked myself up to, one of the more busy, I don't know if I call fine dining, but, you know, it was kind of fine dining to an extent here in Des Moines. And we were busy, you know, outside of, you know, a few summer months, pretty much the entire year beyond that. And, you know, as you work your way up, you get better, you know, sections, better parties, private parties, just like any other job where, you know, you gain skills over time and can apply those and make more money.
Right. Yeah. Not all waiters are created equal. You think like, oh, well, if you have a certain amount of hours, you're going to do the same as somebody else. But that's not true. If you really apply yourself and you work hard, the managers are going to see that. They're going to give you the sections with the better tables, the bigger parties. They'll give you the better hours. I remember that was a big deal. Nobody wanted to work Sunday morning, because that's when all the old people would come in to have brunch, and they weren't good tippers, and they didn't order anything. They would always order just water and lemons, make their own lemonade.
Oh yeah, they make their own lemonade. And I worked in my younger days, I worked at a bar and grill, and it was on the family side. You know, you hear bar and grill, and we had kids eat free Sunday mornings. And when I was brand new there, guess what? We got stuck on that shift. It was the worst thing I've ever seen. But over time, you know, like I said, you gain experience, you work at better restaurants, you get better tables. It's really a meritocracy at work. It's really almost, if you think about it, a restaurant's almost a pure free market system when it comes to pricing labor. It's not, you know, imperfect as all systems are, you know, but I definitely saw the hand of the market when I was an employee and making well over that $2.85 an hour.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of aspects to it. And, you know, a lot of it also has to do with what cities you're in. You know, as you said before, the type of restaurant, you know, there's always, and you know, it's got a lot to do with motivation. You know, are you motivated to do better for yourself? That's always a really interesting, kind of an issue. You know, it kind of sucks. Like I see a lot of people talking, that, you know, they should be able to just find a job and they should be able to just get paid well. And of course there's interesting because there's a whole side of, you know, we could get into talking about debt slavery and how, you know, the government's got debt that must be paid, and in order for them to pay it, everybody has to pay taxes, which means everybody has to work in order to raise money to give it. But you know, there's, and yeah, that is an actual problem, and I would argue that's actually holding more people back than, you know, than the wages or the jobs that are available, because those, you know, that's why we have jobs in the first place. I mean, does anybody get out there and say, yeah, I wish I had a job so that I could do something that I don't like doing? That's never the case. It's, you know, a lot of us do it because we have to pay rent. We have to pay, you know, we have to get food. And it's kind of abstracted from the life that we used to have, where we'd have a lot of leisure time, and we'd do what we needed to do to have our food and shelter and our basic necessities. And that was that. So it's kind of interesting, but you know, to say, you know, that we shouldn't have jobs is, you know, of course other people want to create and build things and get ahead in life. And that's always awesome to do. But yeah, it's when it becomes something that we absolutely depend on for survival, I think that's where we start getting into trouble. But at the same time, you work hard, you get ahead, and you know, work. And it, okay, this is an interesting one. Let me get your perspective on this. So everybody says, you know, work hard and get ahead and you'll do good. But then I hear a lot of people who say, I don't have a lot and I work hard, the system's rigged against me. I say that, you know, it, so hard work is good, but you also have to work harder, not smarter.
Yeah. I mean, you have to play the hand you're dealt, right? You know, you hear a lot of talk about, you know, the identity of politicians, they talk about privilege and so forth, but we're all born in different stations of life, right? Whether it's economics or whatnot, or even skin color. And what I found is, you know, I did have some family help throughout the years. But for instance, when I waited tables, I made enough to pay for community college during that time frame. So I didn't have to go out and get super overloaded in debt when I graduated and moved on to a four-year degree, a four-year school. So, you know, it's one of those things where I kind of thought about, and to wait tables without you know, a huge skill set beyond, you know, learning that customer service. That is a huge skill set if you think about it, if you've ever had worked with, you know, folks in sales and servicing. But, it really prepared me for a sales job and leadership role down the road, because you have to work with all different types of people from all different types of jobs, every walk of life. And, you know, we work with folks that, gosh, were medical students or law students. We work for people that were, you know, waiters, and that's what they did professionally, and anywhere in between. So it really prepared me for the real world where, you know, you have to respect people. Respect your coworkers. Doesn't matter if you're, you know, cleaning dishes. That was one of my jobs, cleaning up dirty dishes at one time. Or if you're the CEO of a company, it teaches respect for everybody in between and how to work with customers. So those are skills that, you know, throughout time have helped me out in my career after I waited tables and bartended, because you really have to be able to work with folks. And, you know, somebody might be dealt a shitty hand, but it's a lot of times how you play it.
Right. Yeah. And it's, you know, I can't say I was on a good path towards a good career in my early years. I mean, I had no idea what I wanted to do. I was going to a community college, and I just got so sick of it because it was, I mean, it was frustrating. I didn't even know what to study because I didn't know what the hell I wanted to do with my life.
Yep.
And, you know, I got the job at a restaurant, and I wasn't happy with that. And I actually, from there, I went to one of my coworkers was also, you know, they had a second job at a temp agency. And so I went, you know, I talked to that friend, and they had me come in, and, you know, from there I was able to get a job that was, it was $10 an hour. And all I was doing was removing staples and making sure, like, I had to go through a checklist and make sure that, like, five different pages were in this stack of papers. And that was $10 an hour. So, like, I hear people complain about minimum wage, and I'm like, come on, there are these jobs out there that, you know. And of course, it's, you know, at the same time, I wasn't even making as much as my friends back, you know, still back at the restaurant who were waiting. But of course, I couldn't get promoted because I just, absolutely. I mean, I was in that mindset too, you know, like, screw this. They should just give me, they should just move me up, and they're not going to, so screw them. Which of course is not the mentality you're going to get a promotion with. But
true.
Yeah, it's, you know, and I've seen it now too, like, you know, now what that was close to 20 years ago now. And, you know, I've hired people before, I've had people working for me. And I've seen, you know, even not even minimum wage jobs, like technical jobs, software engineers, that have been working for me, that, you know, they have that same kind of attitude. And it's like, that doesn't get you raises, that doesn't get you, promoted, that doesn't get you, you know, referred to another project, that maybe pays more further down the line. It really is, you know. So many times I hear 90% of success is just showing up. And some people don't even show up. It's like they're, you know, they promise to be somewhere, they promise to do something, and you never hear from them. Of course, you're not going to get ahead that way.
No, I fully agree. You know, I'm a manager at one of the larger banks, and, you know, I have a team of anywhere between 12 and 15 people, and a lot of great people. And some people we hire, like you said, they just don't show up. And half the job is just being there and being in the right place at the right time. And, you know, through that hard work, you can impress others and build good relationships. And if folks, you know, dwell on their station, oh gosh, I've been, you know, passed over for promotion or not that project, you know, that turns into a, you know, basically a, what they call, self-fulfilling prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't get ahead, but I'm also not helping myself get ahead either. So,
right. Negative self-talk. Get that shit out of your head. And it's interesting, yep, because I've, you know, the first campaign that I ran in 2014 for Texas House, there were a lot of people who, you know, they were saying the same things, you know, we need to increase minimum wage and all these other things. And what I told them was, okay, look, if you think you should get paid more, or if you, not even if you should get paid more, if you want to get paid more, send me a message. And so I got an inbox full of messages. And I took 10 people and I sent them a message back and I said, okay, look, Here are 10 phone numbers. These are jobs that don't require any special skills that are paying more than minimum wage. And they were earning minimum wage. So it you know, it might have been $2 or $3 more than what they were currently getting paid. All they had to do was call the phone number, and I told them, you know, use me as a reference. I will help you get hired. And out of those 10 people, not a single one even picked up the phone to make the call. And it's exactly like you said. It's negative self-talk. It's, I'm not going to get that job. I'm not going to get paid more because the world's not going to pay me more than minimum wage. They won't even say it, but in your head, you think that's all I'm worth. And
yeah.
I don't mean to put these people down because they're kind of already putting themselves down, but we need to get out of that habit. Like, and I know a lot of people, like, where does this come from, right? You go to school and your school tells you, well, you better graduate high school and you better graduate college. And if you don't, you're going to be flipping burgers and earning minimum wage for the rest of your life. So of course, anybody who didn't graduate high school, or didn't go to college, they have this thought in their head. Well, everybody's been telling me my whole life, I'm just going to get minimum wage. Of course. But get that shit out of your head, because I mean, look at Steve Jobs. He was a college dropout and he graduated high school. But, I've talked to people. I've offered to pay for people's GEDs if they go online and take the test, and they won't do that. There's like a block in their head that you got to get over that.
Yeah, I hear you on that. When we talk about minimum wage jobs, we haven't gotten to this, but you know, a lot of these states are trying to put up a living wage for wait staff, and that would actually harm them. If they went to a no tipping culture and say you're a tipped employee and you make say $20 an hour on average in a larger city or more, but they set the living wage at $15, guess what? That's what the employers are generally going to pay. And at that point, so you're looking at a 20% pay cut, 25% pay cut right off the top. Plus, you're paying taxes on everything now. So I know it's been a few years since I waited tables, but allegedly I would hear that a lot of waiters and bartenders wouldn't declare all their cash tips. Things have moved a little bit more towards credit cards and debit cards, which I think has changed that a little bit. But, you know, the way I look at it, you know, according to the IRS, you're supposed to get up to $10,000 tax-free as a gift,
mm-hmm.
something like that, I believe the law is. And it's kind of interesting, you know, sometimes there's downsides to tipping. If you had a bad table that you worked really hard at, they left you, you know, scraps, a manager would be like, well, that's a gift, it's voluntary, but, you know, they kind of do benefit as well because they don't have to build the cost of labor into, you know, the pricing. So there's different ways that sometimes there's downsides to everything, I think. But if you look at a minimum wage set for wait staff and bar staff, I think that harms people more than anything.
Yeah. And that's interesting, too, because so you mentioned the gift tax. And of course, we've got a lot of libertarians out there now that are, you know, when they sign for the credit card, they write taxation is theft in the tip column and they leave cash.
Yep.
But there's so there's a couple interesting things. One is you've got your minimum deduction, which is I think it's like $14,000 now. So basically your first $14,000 you don't have to pay tax on. Of course, you still have to pay Social Security and some other crap
sure.
that you'll never get. But you also so on top of that, your gift tax is an additional $10,000. So really, if you make $24,000 now, that can be tax-free. But to what you were talking about with the tips, there's, I'm sure it varies from state to state, or, you know, maybe it's a federal IRS thing, but, you know, I've heard people say, and if you're watching, if you're in the comments, you know, feel free to chime in and give us some better information on this. But if you, there's kind of like a minimum tax. So if the government estimates that you should have earned $100 in tips based on the number of tables or the number of hours that you worked, then they're going to want you to claim and pay taxes on that $100. Whereas if you, you know, if you were under tipped for some reason and you only earned $50, you're still going to have to pay the tax as if you earned $100. And, you know, maybe it's because of, you know, whatever reason, maybe they think you're earning tax and you're keeping it, or sorry, you're earning cash and you're keeping it so you don't have to pay tax on it. You know, there's a lot of different ways to look at it. But of course the government thinks it's theirs and they want to make sure that they're not getting ripped off, which is,
And you know, there's and I don't know if this is kind of a boogeyman to get us all to declare cash tips, but, you know, I've heard of stories of, you know, full restaurants where all the wait staff got audited, the restaurant got in trouble. You know, I don't know what the code is on that, you know, but, and that could have been a boogeyman to try to get us all to make sure that we're claiming 100% of our tips. Generally speaking, restaurants, you know, if you have a credit card tip, that's boom, it's income. They'll track right. that for you. You know, if there's a gratuity on the table, 15-20%, whatever it might be, that would also be tracked as income. So, you know, they do track that. And as, like I said, we're becoming a cashless society. You know, I just urge the listeners out there that, you know, if you're appreciating your server, your bartender, and they did a good job, throw them cash if you have it. Definitely helps them out. I remember back when Ron Paul was running for president, they had business cards, Ron Paul cards, that had, I think it's called the Tax-Free Tip Act. And his position was that, you know, you're working hard for your money. And I know he believed in a 0%
yep.
income tax, but this was specifically targeted towards, you know, folks that are wait staff who are overwhelmingly young people, a lot of single mothers in there, a lot of students, single fathers, young families, and they're having to pay these taxes, and it hurts, you know, young people as they're coming up. It doesn't matter if you're younger, if you're a professional wait staff, it hurts you. And I had a stack of probably 200 of them. I passed them out for a year before the Iowa caucus and made sure every single bartender or waiter, waitress that I worked with or that, you know, they gave me their services, got that card, and they're aware that, you know, taxation is indeed theft, and that includes on your tips.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I remember that. And that was a great idea because it was, you know, like we say, all these politicians now on the left are talking about giving handouts to people who don't have a lot. And the reality is, like, why? You don't need to give them handouts. Just stop taking their money and they'd have so much more. Now, so here's another thing I've heard. And I don't know entirely how accurate it is, but there's, you know, the business itself can have like a minimum tax imposed on tips. So they're, you know, they're expected to have tips and all this other stuff. And that leads to, you know, we hear people complaining about, you know, hey, we have a big table, everything's slow. And then, you know, and then they have this mandatory tip on top of it. Like if you have, you know, a party of six, there's a mandatory 18% gratuity. And you know, a lot of people complain about this, but I think, you know, that's probably got something to do. I'd like to hear more from somebody who's, you know, maybe does taxes for restaurants and knows, you know, exactly about that. Is there, you know, is that because of taxes? Is that because they know that they're going to have to pay a minimum amount of tax, whether they get tipped or not? You know, that sort of thing. And, you know, of course, there's a whole other discussion about whether or not, you know, that's theft because you didn't agree to that. But of course, you know, if they have it posted before you walk in there, then you kind of did. But, you know, I hear people complain like, oh, the wait staff is slow and all this other stuff, and they want to take it out and they want to say, you know, hey, I don't want to tip. And that's definitely not what I'm trying to, you know, for anybody who thinks I'm trying to get at, you know, hey, we shouldn't have to tip. That's definitely not it. The thing with the tips is, or the thing with, you know, with slow service, yes, sometimes you have a slow waiter who really doesn't care about you and they don't deserve a tip. But sometimes it's, you know, either the manager's an idiot or, and he does it all the time, or it's just a fluke of a weekend where they're a lot busier than they expected and they're understaffed. And sometimes the waiters are working really, really hard, you know, to keep up with everything. And there's just so many customers. That's not their fault. Don't take it out on the customer. You know, that's we kind of have to understand that when we look, you know, when we want to factor in how much tip we're going to leave based on service, you know, it's not always just the waiter's fault. If they're doing their best to take care of you, but the management screwed up somewhere, then, you know, take it out on the manager and he's not getting any of the tips.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, in my experience with larger tables, restaurants do their best with staffing and they do their best with staggering out reservations if it's a restaurant that has them. And all you can do is estimate, right? You know, I work in sales now as a manager, and you estimate the number of leads coming in, you estimate the number of calls in, and you staff based on that. But it's not perfect, you know, and it's one of those things where I think that, you know, if you have a waiter who has a big party, chances are they're a more experienced waiter and they're doing their best, you know, to work with the kitchen, to work with management, to make sure that, you know, your food's on time, that they're not getting overloaded with the tables where they can't help you out. Sometimes those things happen. A lot of it is out of the waiter's hands. Occasionally, we would have, you know, customers that would complain about the tip or the gratuity on the check. And, you know, as a waiter and a bartender, I would make the argument that, hey, you know, that's a contract that it's kind of a nonverbal contract that it's on the menu that, you know, X amount of people would have an 18% tip or 15%. But the managers would generally not shy on the side of the wait staff. I had a few that would, that, you know, they talk to the customer and they'd be like, well, you know, it doesn't really sound like it was a service issue. So it's like, maybe there's an issue with the food. What was the waiter attentive? Did they respond to your needs? And they would they'd be more balanced. You know, they would be like, okay, well, that was more of an issue. You didn't tell the waiter that there's an issue. So how can they fix it? You never gave them an opportunity to fix it. I don't know if it was ever because of a tax law or not. I didn't recall hearing anything about it. Quite often that 18% or 20%, it's to protect the waiter. You know, if there's only one big table that they have all night, that's the make or break for them, you know. And that can be pretty tough. In some ways, you can go negative even if somebody like that were to refuse to tip, because, you know, overall you're doing probably over that minimum wage. But for that day, you know, it's pretty much scrapped. You came into work and you lost that opportunity cost of doing something else with your time because somebody chose to make a complaint over maybe a non-valid reason, or they're just trying to get out paying it because they disagree with it. We had customers that disagreed with it, but they would not talk about it until after the dinner service is over. And that's a different issue than, you know, if it was a customer service issue or not. They just don't believe in tipping. And, well, they agreed to it by bringing that group in and reading the menu that says 18%.
Right.
That was at least my opinion on it.
Yeah, no, I mean, as soon as you see that, that's your opportunity to say, hey, you know what, we don't believe in that. We're gonna leave. We're going to eat somewhere else, which is totally acceptable. But if you're going to, you know, like you said, if a big party comes in and they're going to, like, you know, we did this in our restaurant, a big party comes in and a server might have a section with four tables. Well, you got to take all four of those tables and put them together. And now they have one table. And if that table doesn't want to tip, they're screwed. Then on top of that, you have, you know, sometimes it's a lot of people that, you know, they want to sit around and talk for a couple hours afterwards. So now you don't even get any tables after that. Or they're, you know, they're splitting the check and somebody, you know, there's always, they don't actually split the check. So it's one big check, but everyone puts in cash. And then there's always somebody who didn't leave enough, or they didn't leave enough for a tip, and they just kind of walk out. And, you know, sometimes the full amount isn't even paid, even with a tip. And then there's, you know, one poor bastard who's the last guy out that's like, I put my money in. What do you want me to do?
Well, yeah, it's been interesting. You know, I've got a couple of things that are related to that. One, you know, when you were a host, did you get paid tip out by chance?
Nope.
Okay, so, you know, for the listeners who aren't aware, tip out is basically you're redistributing some of your tips to the busboy, to perhaps the bartender, to the hosts. So even if you have a table where, say, it's $100 in sales and they stiff you, you're not paying out based on a percentage of your tips. You're paying out based on a percentage of your sales. So that, you know, that could be maybe a downside of a tip type environment, is you might have a table that spent $100 and you just paid $5 for the privilege of being stiffed. which, you know, that's something to keep in mind as you go out. I know that, you know, some people disagree with the tipping culture, even if you're a libertarian, and that's fine, but that's nonetheless the culture we live in, right? And
right.
It could be a case where somebody, you know, doesn't make their money, and for gosh sakes, never, you know, walk out of a restaurant without paying. Wait staff often have to cover walkouts out of their own pocket. And I don't know what the managers expect them to do. I mean, you're not going to chase somebody down the street or wrestle them down, right? I mean, that's a huge liability issue.
Right.
But, you know, I worked in restaurants where somebody walked out on their bill or they didn't leave enough. The waiter was expected to cover it. The business did not eat that. I think that is immoral in a different sort of way, I believe. But nonetheless, that's also the situation that many businesses operate on. And, you know, I've been told that, well, you don't like it, you don't have to work here. And I've known people that have left restaurants because of that.
Right. Yeah, it's, I mean, you know, that is kind of the way to look at the market is, you know, yeah, if you don't like it, move to Somalia. But you know, and yeah, that is kind of true to a certain extent. If you don't like it, you could always find another job that has a fixed amount with less risk. But there's, you know, there's also that, and you know, maybe that's one way to look at it. You know, this job does have a little bit of risk to it, but because of the risk, you also have the opportunity to really work those tips and make a lot more than, you know, minimum wage. Like you were talking about 50 or 60 grand, and there's always a way to move up. There's, you know, some people I've seen, they posted that they were making 80 to 90 by going to fancier restaurants that have bigger checks. And of course, you know, that's not going to be your first waiter job. But if you kind of work your way up from something that's maybe not as good, and you get that experience, then you can definitely do that. Now, actually, something you just talked about, I did want to talk about is the walkouts, because I'm not going to mention any names, but there are some people, even in our circles, that are now, because they're anti-corporation, they're doing the dine and dash, and you know, they're saying, yeah, we're sticking it to the corporation, but you know, like you just said, it's the corporation doesn't pay for that. It's the waiter who gets screwed out of it. So, you know, what's
step is step, right? You know, I mean, I'm not necessarily a big fan of a lot of the corporate culture out there and the corporatism we have with our government. But, you know, if you walk out on a restaurant tab, I mean, you're stealing from the restaurant and you could be stealing from the wait staff. And, you know, I guess you'd argue that, well, it's not moral for the restaurant to make them pay, but that's not my problem. You're part of the equation if you do that. So if you're a libertarian and you're doing that, you know, I've got to say that's a violation of the non-aggression principle in my book.
I agree. Shame on you. You know who you are. So yeah, it's, you know, that's all interesting. And it's, you know, something else, you know, when you talked about getting, you know, when we talk about, let's say you have a big party and, you know, something messes up, that's not the wait staff's fault. So you don't feel like tipping, but you know, it's not their fault. What else can you do? And what I've seen a lot of people do is, you know, if you complain because the food wasn't good, you know, for whatever reason, something that wasn't, you know, wasn't the waiter's issue, you know, they'll give you free coupons and all kinds of stuff. Now you're making sure that you're, you know, the waiter who did his best to make sure that you did get what you got is taken care of. But you're, you know, it's the restaurant, that's how you make the restaurant pay for it, so that you come back, you get your free meal.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, the restaurant obviously has a vested interest in keeping as a returning customer. It's cheaper to maintain a customer than to get a new one through advertising and so forth, right? So, you know, just even if there are just a bunch of Grinches that run the place, there's a monetary interest in that. I would say this, if you get a discounted tab, keep that in mind when you're leaving your waiter a tip. You know, oftentimes I don't think people were trying to be cheap or to hurt the wait staff, but quite often you'll get a discounted tab where the tip is based on, you know, the new bill and not the original. So, I mean, if I was out eating and say they burnt my steak and they had to send it back twice, you know, personally, maybe that's because of my restaurant experience. personally, I'm going to leave the full amount. I'll look at it, be like, all right, well, they took $20 off. The bill would have been $100. I'm leaving a tip based on a $100 bill, not an $80 bill.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great point. Because you're getting your discount. You don't need to discount the tip also.
Yeah.
And I mean, if you get a tip like that, if you get $20 off a $100 tab, that's really your tip anyway.
Yeah. And I'll say this, you know, if your waiter or your bartender did a great job, and you have a complaint with, say, the food, you know, be sure it's just polite to let the manager know. It's like, hey, you know what? They did a great job. They're really attentive. I was just disappointed in the food and the the drink, whatever it might be. And, you know, approach it from that angle. They're there to help you. They're, you know, they don't want to be antagonistic or anything. And most managers, I would say, are there to listen and to make sure that you're satisfied when you leave.
Yep, absolutely. And of course, as they say in waiting, don't piss off people who manage your food.
Isn't there a great little libertarian speech in there somewhere?
Yeah. I'm sure there's a few of them.
I watched it the other day, and I was going to try to caption it and throw it online, but I forgot about it. So I'll have to go back and look for it.
Yeah, that was an awesome movie. Of course, that's like an exaggeration of the stuff that goes on there.
Yeah.
In my restaurant, I think the worst that we saw was it was a chain, and we had one guy come from another store, and he came to ours, and he was looking at like where we kept our forks, and he was like, "Oh my God, this fork tray is dirty. It's got like, you know, whatever kind of crumbs and stuff at the bottom of it."
Yeah. Yeah.
That kind of stuff, but you know, nobody's spitting on the food or any of that stuff, but you know, I'm sure that stuff happens. I've seen, you know, news articles where somebody gets caught and yeah, but
yeah.
So don't mess with people who,
I mean, you know, people, if you're nice to people, they're more willing to be nice to you and to work with you. Right.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't mean that you have to suck up or that, you know, you shouldn't say, if there was a problem and talk to your waiter and your manager about it. But, you know, I worked back of the house for several years as well as a cook. And I never saw anybody, you know, it wasn't like waiting where somebody is rude and there was some sort of deal where the waiter came back and was like, this guy sucks. And next thing you know, everyone's, you know, spitting on the food or throwing it on the ground. I never saw that. You know, I worked in restaurants for 15 years, so.
Absolutely. Yeah, you know, that's interesting too, because I've seen people, customers can be worse than the wait staff. I saw somebody one time we were teenagers, so we were like, you know, 19 something. We all went to a restaurant, and there was probably 10 or 12 of us, and one of them, there was this girl who pulled a hair out of her own head and stuck it in her food so that she could say, there was a hair in my food, and because she just didn't like what she got.
Yeah, I remember. I thought that was a teenager. I remember we would go to Perkins after the movies and, you know, just get the cheapest. We were just poor kids, you know. And
right.
Get the cheapest stuff possible, and there'd always be – I remember a kid, I'm not going to say his name, but – he would complain about like his cheese sticks or whatever to the manager just striking something for free. You know, that again, you know, that's kind of a childish thing to do. And I think in that violation, you're committing fraud. You're lying about your food to get something for free. So.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's, you know, some people, they feel like, that's a place where you can go, where you can kind of boss people around and, you know, that's just where you get to take out some sort of aggression on somebody who has to do what you say. And it's really a fucked up way to look at it.
Yeah, that's not right.
Yeah. Some people kind of have that in the back of their head and yeah, it's, you know, this is kind of we talked about like negative self-talk. That's kind of it is some form of negative self-talk, but it's taken out on other people. As a society, yeah, we need to kind of catch ourselves doing that, and correct it. You know, not to say that, you know, I don't want to insult the people that do that, but you know, if you do that, it's something that should be corrected. We should acknowledge that, you know, we're not perfect people. We all make mistakes, and we should work to improve ourselves, especially when we complain about how the world is so screwed up to us. You know, the worst thing we could do is pass that on to somebody else instead of saying, okay, this is where that stops. Let's make the world a better place.
Well, yeah, we're all in it together, right? You know, I mean, you know, when you look at business and how we interact with each other, you know, I don't care if you're a busboy or a waiter or the CEO, like I said earlier, I think everyone should be, you know, the default should be you respect other people and treat them, you know, in a respectful and kind manner, unless proven otherwise. And I'm not saying that there's ever room for, you know, becoming upset, and that happens in life, but, you know, I mean, it's, gosh, if somebody screws up your food, I mean, again, well, who am I talking to? I do my Fight for 15 update when they screw up my food and put it post online. But, it, you know, I don't take it out on – I don't go yell at some waiter because they forgot, you know, my French fries. I just ask them, hey, you know what, I didn't give them the French fries, and they come out eventually. So it's
right.
Not going to be the world if somebody does that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I saw yesterday, actually, we were trying to rent a car here in LA, and the company overbooked, and the guy at the counter is, you know, he's kind of having to tell everybody, hey, you got to wait. What happened was there weren't any cars, and the company was still booking them even though they hadn't been returned yet. So,
yeah,
and, you know, and these guys have to deal with it, and they're, you know, they're getting yelled at by some people who are just frustrated, and I get it. You know, you're pissed off. I was pissed off. We had to wait for the car too. We waited over an hour, and, you know, but it's not that guy's fault. It's the company's fault. Leaving bad reviews, just stop waiting and go to the place next door and get their car. There's so many different things you can do, but you know, it's don't take it out on the people who aren't the ones responsible for screwing up, I guess. That's
You're being a bully if you know. I get we're emotional creatures, right? And you know, we can become upset, but just to take out something on someone else that wasn't responsible for the mistake, you know, you're taking it on somebody that, you know, doesn't have really a lot of ability to stand up for themselves because they're worried, especially customer service. It's usually entry level. They're worried they're gonna get fired or written up, and you know, they're just trying to keep a roof over their head and get along in life as best as they can.
Absolutely. So this has actually turned into a pretty interesting conversation. You know, this is the humanitarian side of libertarianism. You know, we aren't all assholes that want to see, you know, that want to see you starve in the street if you can't make your way into a $1 million job. You know, we do understand the complexities of life, and we've been through it ourselves, and you know, there is a way out, and we just kind of have to stay positive.
Yeah.
So awesome. So thanks for joining me and talking about this, and you know, we got some interesting information and insight into all of this. Hopefully everybody else learned some interesting stuff. I want to give you an opportunity before we go to plug, you know, any kind of website, or, you know, if you want anyone to make a donation to your LP, chapter, anything like that, go for it.
Let me throw it out there. Yeah. It's funny, as you, years ago, our committee said, we won't shake you down for money. And when I was elected chair, I said, I will shake you down for money. Because it, you know, it does take donations to keep us going. Right now, we're working on buying data. One of the things, you know, as you know, as a candidate, it's expensive, and we're trying to get valid emails, valid contact information. So that's something we're working on, setting up a paid email service. So, like I said earlier, I'm the chairman of the Libertarian Party of Iowa. If you like what you hear, check out lpia.org/donate. We will. You know, welcome any donations or contributions from out of state. Right now, we're really fighting against some ballot access killing bills for the Libertarian Party that here in Iowa that would really impact our ability to field candidates. The Republicans are definitely scared of us. It's a Republican bill, and they're wanting to double, triple, quadruple the signature requirements and move up our filing deadlines by 6 months, 5 months. which would really harm our ability to run candidates. And some of it is because you ran 35 candidates last year. We had our largest field in our history as a party, and you know that ruffles some feathers, and they want to put up some roadblocks. So that's what we're working on here in Iowa. So I do appreciate the time and get to talk to you a little bit more. I didn't talk with you as much at the convention as I would like. So thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Yeah. And definitely, we hear so much about, we want to get money out of politics. And then we hear shit like this. That's just, you look at every policy that these guys come up with, to get money out of politics and protect the little guys' ballot access, and it's usually the opposite. We have to deal with that all the time. It's easy for the big, the Democrat and the Republicans, they have a power hold on the entire system. That's not democracy. And of course we're kind of, I guess, against democracy as a whole when it comes to mob rule, but we're sold this idea that we have this democratic process where everybody's got a fair shot to have their voices heard, and we can vote for whoever we want. But the reality is, no, you can't, because the people you might want to vote for, you never get to hear from them because the media doesn't cover them, and you don't get to vote for them because they can't always make it onto the ballot. They make it as difficult as they possibly can. So that's really important to make sure you support the small candidates. Even sometimes if you don't agree with everything they say, at least support them and support their access so that you're supporting free speech. You're supporting an opposing opinion. You might like one candidate who's a Democrat or a Republican, but they're wrong on one policy, and you've got some third party guy who's just right on one policy. Maybe it's taxation is theft, and you just want to make that be heard. You don't have to vote for him. Just help him get on the ballot and help them be heard.
Yeah, I think more choices, more voices, right?
Absolutely. Okay, awesome. Well, Joe, thanks for coming on again. And I'll put the link to your donate page in the comment of the video after this. And of course, we'll upload this this will be available on YouTube and iTunes, Google Podcasts, everywhere else by tomorrow. So thanks for watching. Taxation is theft, and we'll see you next time.
Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico!